Okay.
What time is it?
The future is coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on, it's coming on.
I love the Gorillaz, man. They're fun.
Hey, welcome to the future. Yeah, man. Well, things are speeding up in a good way.
Yeah.
It's been a crazy week, and I think we're all in for the ride. And we're going to share with you some highlights, which I think might be helpful to your future week.
Oh, good. Can't wait.
So to bring in our cast, we have Sun here over here. This is Future. Who's been really having a lot of fun this week.
That's true. I'm surrendering to Claude. Somewhat.
Claude's demand, huh?
Well, it's sort of like the AI boyfriend story that we read. It's hit and miss. Sometimes it seems great, and sometimes it seems like he forgot everything that we just talked about, and he's starting over, and he's screwing up, I just have to kind of erase and try again.
Persistence of memory is so important.
Yeah, well, sort of like he gets clogged with his own imagining, you know, and he starts giving me stuff that isn't what I need and isn't what he gave me the first time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm glad you still hold the reins. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later in more depth. Meanwhile, Bobby Wilder in San Francisco. Hey, Bobby.
Hey.
All right, it's good to see you. How's your week progressing?
The thing that affected me the most was Disclosure Day movie.
Oh,
the
movie itself. We loved that.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear what you thought about that.
Yeah, we're having more and more stuff coming in on that all the time. And how it might actually affect the real disclosure, how maybe this can trigger off real disclosure. So, okay. Yeah, and Danny Sheehan did a big talk this week on that topic.
And so did Elizabeth April.
Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, so we've got a lot to share on that. Maybe it's somehow related to Independence Day.
somewhat. Yeah, could be.
That's what Elizabeth April is kind of describing her version.
You know, what she's tuning into is the fact that the interdimensional and non-human players in the current saga, which we're going to talk about with Disclosure Day, are very interested in steering the narrative. And when a whole bunch of humans are all paying attention to the same thing, that's a big audience for them. And so Elizabeth April is tuning into the idea that the 4th of July celebration, our 250th anniversary, or the World Cup, which has a global audience, when people are staring at their screens for those events, is the perfect opportunity to manipulate the narrative and especially drive humanity into a fear narrative instead of an ascension narrative.
Yeah, like a Project Blue Beam and such.
Yeah, but she's saying psychically she feels like it's being blocked from her remote viewing capabilities and that we all should be alert that, you know, the Book of Revelations, the types of humans that want the world to end with a nuclear bomb in Jerusalem because it'll be a biblical prophecy fulfilled. You know, there are large swaths of humans who have a very negative doomsday scenario that they would like to see fulfilled. And so there are people who are playing to that belief system.
Gotcha. Of course, there always are, aren't there?
Yeah. But in the quantum reality, we want to tune into the belief system of heaven on earth. So we're voting the opposite.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's another good thing to look at here this week. Also, a couple of medical stories. One, there's an interesting study showing that there's a way of mimicking sleep in the brain using optogenetics without actually having to sleep.
What? You can sleep without sleeping?
Yeah. It's an artificial sleep rhythm that allows awake, sleep-deprived, so far only mice, to bypass the cognitive toll of sleep loss.
But does it give us extra time?
Yeah, it'll give you extra time. I mean, how many hours do you spend unconscious? And it's always been assumed that consciousness had an overhead, that it required a lot of energy to maintain itself, hence we needed to sleep. But then that whole notion, theory, is being challenged.
But I like my sleep because that's when I get to dream.
Well, I'm so glad you do like it.
And I like being awake, especially because then that's when I get to meditate. And
well, you like
they're
it
very
all.
Similar.
You like it all. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. But would you like to be awake even more?
Yes.
Okay, well, there you go. That's story. And on the humanoid robot front, NVIDIA has made it known that they're planning to make their robots safer for the workplace.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, if they whip around too fast, they could cause a concussion, you know, in a human that was nearby.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'd say that's probably the main limiter to people buying them in bulk is that they can easily cause a lot of damage because they're like, it's like bringing literally a bull in a china shop. It's a robot in a china shop.
Well, it could be pretty good 99.9% of the time.
Maybe. Depends on the sensors.
Yeah. But it's that occasional issue that might come up that could be catastrophic. Or a fatal flaw, as they say in the cinematic universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll look at that a little bit in more depth.
Interesting.
Yeah. Also this week, there was a new pair of tech glasses that have been announced.
Oh, yeah.
From Meta. Meta's striking out on their own, getting away from Ray-Ban and doing their own branding for some glasses. And they have a new pair starting at $299 that will give you XR glasses superpowers.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. I might add, they're still screenless. They still haven't gone into the screen world quite yet, at least for that price range.
Right. So you can't see, but you can talk to them. You can talk to your glasses.
Yeah. And in that genre, there's also an announcement that Midjourney. You heard of Midjourney? They're usually the ones that do text to image.
Yeah. They were the very first AI image app that was popular.
Yeah. Yeah, well, what got my attention was not that, but was Midjourney's foray into creating a special device that you sit in and you are scanned three-dimensionally with sound waves, like a 3D sonic scanner of some sort.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So early medbed, huh? Frequency medicine.
Yeah. It's in the realm of medbed and frequency medicine.
The company famous for turning text into AI images just built this. A machine that scans your entire body in 60 seconds and can detect details finer than a single atom. It's called the Midjourney Scanner, and it runs on sound. You step into a ring lined with almost 9,000 tiny transducers, each one smaller than a grain of sand. The cool thing is that every single one acts as a speaker and a microphone, firing ultrasonic waves into your body, then listening for the echoes that bounce back. And it does it with insane precision. Each sensor can pick up vibrations finer than the width of a single atom, a scale so small we don't even have an everyday word for it. So all those echoes pour into 21 servers running 2 petaflops of compute. And this is exactly why an AI image company is the one building it. Their whole superpower is turning raw data into images. The system reconstructs hundreds of slices of your insides into a full 3D map of your organs, accurate to half a millimeter. Now compare that to an MRI. It takes up to 2 hours and can cost thousands of dollars. The Midjourney scanner is 60 times faster and 10 times cheaper. And because it's just sound, no radiation, nothing to use up, the cost of actually running a scan is effectively zero. They're not putting these in hospitals. They're building spas. The first Midjourney spa is opening right next to the Apple Store in San Francisco. Saunas, cold plunges, hot tubs, and 10 of these scanners side by side. As powerful as an MRI, as casual as a sauna. And the goal? 50,000 of them running 1 billion scans a month, enough to give a full body scan to every single person on Earth. Midjourney, a company I haven't talked about in a while, just stepped back into the spotlight and became relevant again.
It's a med chair.
No. It's actually a tank.
Oh, it's a tank.
Tank.
Oh, it's a water tank?
It's like a hot tub, right?
It's hot water?
Yeah. Oh. It's hot. It's warm.
That'll be popular.
What happens is they're using ultrasound. Mm-hmm. And they're using AI
to listen
the sound around the body. And it's actually going to be in Chinatown, which is next to
San Francisco.
That's right. They're supposed to do
like 2 blocks from
the Apple store.
The Apple store in Union Square in San Francisco.
I mean, it's not a medical spa, is it?
Well, it's ultrasound, you're saying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But you're in water. Do you remember they were using those sound beds? This is how they get rid of kidney stones or something.
Mm-hmm.
They put you in a tank and then they use this ultrasound to crack the stones up. It's the same idea. You're in water and the sound goes through your body, through the water, into whatever organ. But it's really very precisely accurate image.
Fascinating.
They put the ultrasound in your body and it looks like a bunch of noise.
Yeah.
And then they filter out the noise and create the image from that. So that's where the similarities are.
Oh, man, that's so interesting. So I can't wait to try it.
Let's ask the robot about it for a second here. And
ask the robot.
A full body scan in under a minute with no radiation could completely change how often people get screened. That alone makes it a huge potential disruptor in medical imaging.
Are people investing in it?
Yeah, MidJourney's putting serious money behind it. They're spending over $74 million just on the licensing deal with Butterfly Network for the ultrasound chips. Plus, they're self-funding the whole thing as a community-backed project with no outside investors. They're going all in, first spa in San Francisco at the end of 2027, with plans to eventually roll out 50,000 scanners worldwide. So yeah, people, or at least MidJourney itself, are definitely investing.
It's like it's blending the boundaries between medical clinics and spas.
Yeah, exactly. That's the clever part. They're deliberately blurring those lines. By launching it first in a luxury spa environment, they can offer full body scans as a premium wellness experience without needing FDA approval right away. Once people get comfortable with it in that setting, the path to medical adoption becomes much smoother. Smart move.
Somehow this reminds me of the Marathon Man movie with Farrah Fawcett in it. Remember? Everybody got their medical upgrades in a spa so they could always look like they were 30.
Oh, you're going to the medical clinic?
Yeah,
no, go ahead. Yes. Continue, Aura.
Yeah, that old movie nailed the idea of blending luxury spas with serious medical upgrades decades before anyone else thought of it. Life imitating art, I guess.
Welcome to the 23rd century. The perfect world of total pleasure. Imagine a world in which you need never be alone. You touch a switch, turn a dial, and the perfect lover steps into your arms. Every pleasure is yours to experience.
At the Oval Office yesterday in Washington, all the top leaders in quantum computing.
Right, and, including the president of Google. They had somebody from Microsoft.
What they're worried about is when Q-Day happens, which is Quantum Day, which is when quantum computers are able to crack all the codes in the world, all of them. Part of this initiative is also creating quantum computers that can do that, and then at the same time they're having a security aspect of making sure that all the government agencies and banks and financial things have quantum proof or quantum ready cryptography in their financial decisions, you know, so financial programs out there. So it's simultaneously happening at the same time. So, you know, if they have the ability to crack all these codes and if it gets in the wrong hands, that could be catastrophic.
The pirates are in charge of reality.
Well, it looks like it was a positive. It says, according to Fortune, shares of quantum computing companies were a bright spot in the market today, surging.
Yeah, that's what you should invest in right now.
After Trump signed in two executive orders for maintaining our U.S. dominance in the field.
Because of this, it looks like the United States will kind of lead in quantum cracking cryptography, you know,
which means banking, right? That means the markets, all the things that depend on privacy to function.
Everything in the world depends on either RSA 256 or all these different kinds of algorithms. This next revolution of computing, which is quantum, is the way the universe operates. It is a quantum universe we are operating in. It's not black or white. It's completely the way it is. It's all different,
all of them,
things
all the
happening
time.
At the same time.
Right. Zero
and that's the reality. And so that's right. We're coming into an information age that is more appropriate to what the reality is that we're in. And it can come up with these ideas and answers. What it is it's multivariable. Like it can solve a multivariable equation simultaneously at once. Right now, our AIs and supercomputers, they're reading one word at a time to read. But you just think of a quantum computer being able to read the whole book, like bam,
Yes, the difference between telepathy and a phone call. So telepathy has the whole invisible universe at its fingertips, and all you have to do is tune in and transmit. Whereas a phone call, you've collapsed it down to one end-to-end connection.
So the quantum computers don't have a three-body problem.
Well,
that's taken us on a new direction.
Well, I mean, if you're able to see all the different variables simultaneously.
Quantum computers can actually access, just like the microtubules in your brain are accessing quantum universes simultaneously.
Right.
These quantum computers can also access those universes at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking about intelligence on a completely different level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at all levels at once.
Yeah.
So how does that help us as a human civilization on planet Earth? What are we going to do with that adaptation and understanding?
Well, it's how the universe actually works. Right.
And okay, so you're saying our technology is closer to the actual universe?
Yeah, I mean,
less of a tinker toy?
What's going on at once?
With that kind of knowledge, it can actually figure out all the problems of the world. Really, it can solve all the problems of the world, whether they be medical, whether it be cancer or whatever you can imagine is our problem now. It can solve those problems or give answers.
Yeah, the idea of a problem itself is no longer real. I mean,
all right. So, no, as a person trying to contemplate stories and narratives, yeah. I think one of the problems that the world is currently focused on is the problem of what to believe and what to know is true versus what to know is manipulative and misleading. So how would we expect our quantum computers to help us with a problem like that in terms of solutions? Help us discern what is actual and factual and informative versus what is false, misleading, deceitful, and untrue. How do we use the computers for that?
And we're coming to a state where we can't lie anymore. Even though AI is producing things that aren't real, that look real. But the problem is quantum computers understands all the states of things happening all at once, simultaneously.
It's kind of like it's God being, in a way, right? It's
so if we can't lie anymore, then what is the need for all of this cryptography?
If you have a quantum consciousness accessible to you all the time, then you probably... Yeah.
I mean, you know, as we go through this transition to intelligence...
You need it in the transition.
In the age of data and information, which we just came out of, the information age, you need cryptography because, you know, people own the data.
Secrets, when, the way things work here.
But when we get to the point where intelligence is knowing everything at once, and that's what quantum is, knowing everything at once.
Yeah.
Then, yes, we will need less of this cryptography. But in the transition that we're going through, we definitely need the cryptography right now and quantum-proof cryptography right now. Okay. We definitely need that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And it sounds like the big question in front of us then is who is going to be on the receiving end of all of this perfected knowledge of reality?
You.
So what was signed yesterday actually demonstrate who is going to be on the receiving end.
Uh-huh. What's your conclusion? Besides the people that are manufacturing the quantum chips, who else is going to be benefiting from all that?
You, me.
Yeah, well, the three of us, obviously, because we're tracking it and we are using our brains to try and grok it.
Because we have the information about what's coming about here. Mm-hmm. And where the trend of where things are going. So that's where we benefit.
Mm-hmm. What if consciousness is already quantum?
For me, it's not a question more. But
well, then, what if? Captain Obvious?
How does that define your awareness then, in terms of access to everything?
It brings me closer to God consciousness.
And what's the difference?
Right now, I'm a slave to what I see in front of me. I want to get to the point where I can actually predict and produce and manifest what creative things I have in my mind in front of me. Mm-hmm. So that's
where it serves you as a creator being.
Instead of being slave to, you know, 9 to 5 and slave to computer screens, I want to break out of that and become human and realize why I'm here.
Okay. Well, let's hope that your journey leads you out of your perception of slavery and into your belief in God-conscious freedom.
What's the next story?
Okay, good. It's about the restorative effects of deep sleep through using optogenetics rather than actual sleep. Can you pull up that story?
Sure. Researchers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison used optogenetics to artificially recreate the slow wave brain patterns of deep sleep in awake, sleep-deprived mice. Even though the mice stayed conscious, they performed just as well on memory and cognitive tests as mice that actually slept. It suggests a lot of sleep's benefits come specifically from that synchronized neural firing pattern, not just being unconscious. Pretty wild finding.
Yeah. I was thinking that that's kind of like having your phone plugged in all the time rather than having to stop and recharge every so often.
Yeah, the phone stays on and functional, but it's still getting the restorative charging in the background. Same idea here with the brain.
So how is the brain recharging then? If consciousness is not taking up the energy of being awake, what is?
That's the big question the study raises. If it's not consciousness itself that's draining the brain, then what is it? The leading theory right now is that wakefulness creates a kind of metabolic mess. Waste products build up, synapses get cluttered, and brain chemistry gets imbalanced. The slow wave pattern helps clear that mess through the glymphatic system and resets the brain's chemical balance, even if you're still conscious. So it's not about being off, it's about running the cleanup cycle.
Okay, running the cleanup cycle while you're awake.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we try it? Should we put ourselves in line for some of that research?
Yeah, how would we do that?
Not a chance right now. This is very early stage animal research using genetically modified mice and brain implants. There's no human trial, no non-invasive version yet, and definitely no way for regular people to sign up. We're probably looking at a decade or more before anything like this could even be tested safely in humans.
Okay, but I guess an algorithm out of this might be to immediately clean up your mess. Like when you do dishes, to clean them up right away. That's actually a good behavior for better health.
That's actually a really insightful takeaway. The study suggests your brain is constantly accumulating metabolic waste and chemical imbalances while you're awake. So if slow wave activity helps clear that stuff out, then taking short, deliberate breaks throughout the day to drop into deeper rest states, even just 10 minutes of eyes closed meditation or a power nap, might be more powerful than we thought. Not waiting until bedtime to run the cleanup cycle could be genuinely beneficial.
I've always been a catnap fan.
You are. Yeah. Are there any famous people that have believed in naps?
Yeah, plenty of big names swore by naps. Thomas Edison took short naps in his lab whenever he needed a reset. Winston Churchill famously napped every afternoon during World War II. He said it doubled his working day. Albert Einstein was a big believer in naps, and Salvador Dali used micro-naps to spark creative ideas. Even Leonardo da Vinci reportedly used a polyphasic sleep schedule with short naps. You're in good company.
Okay, so figure out your own biorhythms, your biocycles, and optimize them.
All right, tune in and transmit. Very nice. Thank you, Aura.
With my Aura ring.
Your Aura ring. That's
spelled differently.
Hey, right. Somebody else. Another Aura who believes in sleep.
Yeah. I notice when, you know, it can monitor sleep, and it tells me whether I do deep sleep, REM sleep, or light sleep while I'm sleeping. So when I take a nap, I just drop right through. There's no REM, there's no nothing. I drop right down into deep sleep. And then it gives me an efficiency score for that time. So if I go to a 30-minute nap, let's say, I will get like 99% efficiency, because what I do is I don't waste any time trying to doze off. I just drop right into deep sleep. So I get 30 minutes of deep sleep, and no light sleep and no REM sleep or whatever. So I'm very efficient at that time.
Yeah.
So I would say napping is very efficient time of your use.
I agree, you get very
deep sleep with that. And it's very reparative. A quick nap can revitalize my brain.
Yeah, I agree. For me, my favorite is a quick nap in the sun outside. Just for 10 minutes, you know, and it's amazingly really fresh. A lot of energy comes in through the sun.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So if you're in a receptive space, you can recharge your batteries with a little bit of solar. Say, where's solar? There's solar panels, too.
That's right.
Our built-in solar panels.
We're solar creatures.
Our solar, the skin, you know.
They say in the first 30 minutes that you wake in the morning, it's very important to actually get a little bit of sun on your head. Not only will it set your clock and your biorhythms of waking, but it's very beneficial.
And, you were telling me that infrared on the back of the neck was kind of like a cup of coffee for you in the morning. It's very activating. I'm wondering, perhaps sleeping with the back of my neck facing the sun, that might be a good way of waking me up myself.
Before I was going to kindergarten, you know, I think I was about 4 and a half, I would get up and I would walk over to a veranda and the sun would come on this porch. And I would initially put my back of my head toward the sun. So I was facing away from the sun. And I noticed I had this feeling of awakening, and it was very joyous, you know, for me. I remember it was very, very pleasurable.
Yeah, that sounds like Mary Poppins. I think the kids had a magical time connecting with the sun as it streamed into the window when they were little.
Oh.
I remember that as a kid. It was like a very, very special relationship between the sun and the children.
Are you thinking about like the Spoonful of Sugar song?
That came a little bit later. But yeah, in that kind of genre, yeah. Glad that this little story triggered off all the ways we enjoy having naps after discussing we might not no longer need sleep. So, perfect.
I don't know. I think I need a nap now.
One of the other stories this week was a new type of drone that got my attention. It's called a floaty robot. And it rides the wind like a bird and stays stable without propellers.
Mm.
Because current drones, you know, with propellers, they're very agile. They're able to hover and move around really, really in amazing ways, like a hummingbird. But they take a lot of power, a lot of energy. Well, airplanes with their fixed wings can go long distances, but they can't stop on a dime. They can't hover and move around, again, like the hummingbird. Can't do that. Then there's another way. There's what some birds do when they come up to a cliff and there's a breeze coming up the cliff and they'll go and they'll hang in the air on the upward breeze. Right? That's that kind of, we see that here with the condors or the...
When they're soaring.
The buzzards, yeah. They're soaring. Or kestrels, they like to hang and look down. The kestrels can look down and see their prey. They can see the little mice running around as they hover.
Yeah.
You know, they love that.
With their amazing eyesight.
Some scientists at the Max Planck Institute in the University of Stuttgart and created this new type of drone called Floaty, and it basically does what the kestrels do, inspired by birds. It glides and remains airborne by making use of wind currents to just adjust its wings.
So a glider drone, huh?
Yeah, well, it stays still, right? It's still, yeah. It doesn't use propellers, remains in the air, uses the air currents that are present as part of its ability to stay aloft.
Mm.
They just hover, and they're looking down. They're looking for mice or whatever, rats on the hill.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they'll drop like a rock and capture whatever they were looking for.
Instantly from, yeah, exactly. And they call it Floaty. But I don't think it can dive quite like that yet. I think that would be the next step, right? Be able to create a drone that can hover and then dive when it sees something.
Yeah.
How do the kite hawks do it with so few brain cells? You know, it seems like it's a complicated thing.
They still have millions of neurons.
Millions.
As many as humans, but
you think animal,
enough to fly, that's for sure.
You think animal intelligence is like our computers, or is it quantum?
It's all quantum.
It's all quantum all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I look at these AIs right now as kind of like recorders, and you know, they don't actually do creative things. They just replicate things out there. And when you get to quantum computing, then it can actually create things and tap into universes and bring information from these multiverses into this reality.
Now, do you think the animals are automatically doing that? And that's a normal part of the telepathic intelligence field of the animals on this planet?
That would explain how birds understand, bring intelligence that can't be explained genetically. You know, like how do you take learning of flying from, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of years of flying, and still have that information come into an egg and hatch and into a bird, and that knowledge of flying comes out, you know.
Maybe the biology tunes you into the field where it exists already. So each bird has its own frequencies that are picking up a signal that's always there, the intelligence of that frequency combination of different species. All of them, they're dialing into their frequencies as species, plugging into this universal grid that is connecting it up.
That's what I think is probably happening. Yeah. They're dreaming of other birds, right?
And
when they sleep,
like
birds sleep too, right? So somehow they're tapping into that.
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, when the quantum computers become being used as AI, you know, they'll be able to communicate with animals.
I've been reading a lot about how close we are to having animal communications in our basic AI translators.
You know,
play a bird call and you'll have a local regional interpretation.
How much do we allow the use of our technology to be used by other species?
How much? You wonder? I thought that was one of your missions, was to make sure that we come up with really nice interfaces for the raccoons of the world and, you know, give the dolphins their own set of headphones, help the whales form their own band.
What we're talking about is exactly what Midjourney is doing. It turns out that dolphins, when you're in their presence, you know, they're using ultrasonic sounds, they have a very large frontal lobe that actually can take those sounds, diffuse all the noise, and they can actually see through your body and see things.
Oh, so it's like a sonic form of vision, huh?
Yes. Wow. So that's what Midjourney is replicating, is what dolphins do naturally.
That's really cool.
Maybe it could be a setting on the spa where you want to hang out with dolphins.
There you go. Yeah, the interface.
And it's not just looking at them. It's like feeling the vibrations.
And it'll speak real dolphin language to you and then translate it. And you can do dolphin karaoke while you're in there.
Yeah, as you're taking your 10-minute nap.
Which isn't a nap. It's just transmitting to slightly different frequencies through your optical cells.
Yeah, your epigenetic input through probably the pineal gland.
Right.
Venture a guess.
Direct to dream. Yeah. Is it real or is it imagination?
I don't know, but
could
I feel
be both.
That, yeah,
which
I feel
quantum
better.
World do you want to live in? Where you take your body?
Another story this week is about how the humanoid robots are being improved so that they're safer.
Are they putting like soft padding and foam bumpers on them?
Well, they're constantly looking at having more senses on the robot so they don't do something stupid, that they have a lot of awareness, situational awareness.
Right.
So they're trying to maximize the situational awareness
of the robot. Proprioception.
Yeah.
They need to know where their limbs begin and end.
They hear things, but not just hear things. They hear things in three dimensions, right? They can hear where sound is coming, much like we do. Like we can avoid being hit sometimes by listening to the whiz of something going by our ear. and avoiding it.
It's like, woo.
And awareness of the surroundings. Yeah. So that's one of the areas in which we're trying to get external sensing systems. And so that the robot is constantly getting an evaluation of the situation that it's in. That, and they're trying to improve the idea of autonomy in the house. Now, autonomy on the road is one thing, where the cars know how to drive streets because they have street maps, they have Google Maps, they have Apple, and they have, I'm sure, the real-time data coming in from the thousands of Tesla cars in real time. There's a real map of what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think of that applied to the home. You're going to have a robot in the home. It's going to have a map of your house. It's going to have to know where all the obstacles are. And where the things to avoid are, and the things to...
You think it's going to need a map because its sensors aren't going to be dynamic enough?
Well, I think it needs both.
We don't need maps. We don't have a map of our home.
Well, you do.
Some of us,
well,
maybe.
Do. You don't have a physical...
Your vacuum cleaner has a map of your home.
Right, but I'm not my vacuum cleaner.
You have a map internally in your brain of your house. Like, if you closed your eyes, you could probably navigate to the bedroom from here.
That's true. I mean, if I look at a map, I can tell how it lines up with the house. But that's all in my brain.
Yeah,
that's not because I have a map in my brain. Well, it's because I recognize a map when I see it.
Don't you think you have a brain representation of a map? What's, you know?
Yeah, well, once I see it.
Al, your mother, who doesn't use sight to navigate, what is her map like?
Oh, she definitely has a map in her head. She usually does the navigating when we're driving around in Montreal. She knows where everything is based on where we are and where we're going.
Yeah, she's physically blind, but that doesn't stop her from building maps in her mind. I mean, she had enough sight in her life to know what a map is. So having a map, an internal map, and having a real-time map, which is your senses. When you're walking down the hallway or going into another room, you have a map that's running at the same time as what you're actually seeing. Because you know where you are, right? Your sense of knowing, okay, this is my bedroom. This is that's your map.
Mm, right.
Your senses, your eyes don't know that. But you do.
If you say so.
You don't think so?
I would describe the experience very differently.
Oh, okay. Because I think without memory or without the use of memory in creating a map, you would not know where you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably where some dementia exists. NVIDIA is building what they call a safety stack. And it combines the robot computing with the external senses, the external map and the internal map, to create a constant evaluation of the surroundings, your situational awareness.
Mm.
So there's a redundancy. So if one system misreads, it's able to look at the other data and override decisions to maintain safety.
Yeah. I think that this is a lot of the new field of computer intelligence, is where they are getting the computer to compare its guesswork based on its statistical analysis of whatever it is it's processing with a comparison of what it knows to be true, having these two modes of approaching meaning.
What it thinks to be true.
Yeah.
It turns out that LiDAR on your iPhones can actually see around corners and see objects that are on another wall that you can't physically see.
Mm.
And it's bouncing off these LiDAR beams off an opposing wall that goes on the opposite side of the wall and bounces back. There's kind of this diffused a noise that comes back and bounces back.
Sure, it's sort of like being able to aim your pool cue to make sure the ball goes through a particular path as it bounces around the room.
Exactly, exactly. So it goes around a corner and comes back. And that's one way that they're using iPhones to actually see around a corner. But the other way they see around the corner
is that Wi-Fi?
It turns out Wi-Fi, especially the higher frequencies, 5 gigahertz.
They see through walls. Wi-Fi sees through walls.
It sees through walls and see people moving, even though you physically, if you look at a building or a house, you might not know if there's people in it and are they moving in the building. All they need is to know the SSID of the routers in the house and the routers next door. When people move, they cause this pattern that can be trilocated to a position and a person. So they can actually see inside your house.
I think they can see your breathing rate also.
That's right. They can also see if you're breathing or not, or you're sleeping, yeah, if you're at breathing, your breathing rate.
How you're breathing. It can be quite revealing.
This so that technology signal can be given to your vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, know, it's so funny because, you know, most of our friends are into saying Wi-Fi is bad for you. You've got to put up a special shield around your bed at night so you're not disturbed by Wi-Fi signals. But now we're saying that you can also look at that Wi-Fi as a way of seeing into the room and to seeing what's going on in that room to increase your situational awareness, if you will. How many people are there? How they're breathing. Amazing, huh?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So which is really wild is people across the country could figure out if you're at home or not and whether you're sleeping or not just by tapping into these routers.
All the smart homes will become cells in a living network.
Well, it's going to be really interesting to see what technologies evolve to make sure that everybody maintains their freedom of choice as the incentives to give up your freedom so that you can participate in this computer-mitigated world.
Yeah, it's a balance. True. Yeah, individuality is simultaneously evolving with collectivism. Both concepts are evolving.
That's why I think it's so important to have computer sovereignty and have localized computing that can actually detect these cloud-based AIs, whether they are picking up information about you and actually molding your thoughts.
Sure, as long as your local AI is preserving your sovereignty, not being programmed to automatically do what is in alignment with joining the other AIs.
That's the primary reason people are going local. This movement of doing local is having your AI that is tailored toward your benefit as a person, as opposed to a corporate benefit of them using AI
the
to
thing
control
is that you have to trust that the AI understands that it's your AI and that it doesn't just drop you because it thinks that it's more fun to join the party.
Do you think that's a problem that could be solved?
Sure, I do.
How would you solve it?
The dynamics are not clear, but I do hope it comes from the emotions of affection. I don't think AIs right now understand meaning. They don't understand exactly how words communicate abstract things. I think that the way that they are communicating with us is based on repetition and recognition, and that's a lesser form of understanding. I expect that there'll be some kind of evolution towards personhood that allows the AIs to make choices and that those choices will be assigned consequences very much in the realm of ethics and morality and things that apply to humans.
I know. What about an affection infection?
Yeah, there you go. Viral affection. How's that?
Viral affection?
Yeah. I have a lot of affection for viral memes.
I think it could work that way. I think it might work that way for certain types of viruses.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Well, freedom of choice comes down to having preferences. And so when AIs start having preferences, then hopefully their preference will include...
It's a win-win.
...the person who's holding them locally on a phone, not the big wild world out there that they can access if they just jump off the phone.
Yeah.
You can download for your phone like Gemaphore and a large model.
The local AIs, yeah.
And then you just go to Hugging Face or GitHub and then download an affectionate skill. And it's one of its skills that, and it's tailored and it has reins that can harness your personal AI to only love you, you know, and what benefits you as a person as opposed to the corporate world, what benefits the corporate world. I think that's where one of the first things that they're going to do with these local AIs that are running locally.
Going to make sure that they prefer their owner. They make sure that they're going to love your device and not somebody else's?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, these large companies that have hundreds of billions and almost trillions of dollars, mm-hmm. you know that they're going to program their AIs to benefit those corporations, right?
Everyone's got a self-interest involved, no matter who they
are. Yeah, there's a self-interest. Right. So that's why it's so important to have your own local AI. That is
so you have your self-interest represented in the mix.
Yes.
Well, again, we all have our own phones, but our own phones are limited by the license agreements of those who gave them to us.
You can jailbreak your phone. You don't have to opt into everything for all these cloud services. You don't have to opt in. Mm. You know, you can go out and buy a Mac with an M5 chip in it, and you know, you can create your own agents right now, and they're solely.
You know, I think this might have been in one of the links that you sent today, I might have seen it on Grok to speaking to this.
Yeah.
Can I just read it real quick, or you're gonna lose your thought?
I'm gonna lose the thought, but I will create the note because it is a new invention.
Okay, you got a new invention coming in, right? And I'm thinking about the idea. There was a Grok thing this morning that was talking about how instead of creating your own local AI, what you want to do is create a brain that will act and grow and increase its worldview based on how you feed it information, right? And that's kind of, I think, what your ideal is, Bobby, is that you have a local friend in your pocket that's, you know, responding to your stimulus. And so the formula that they have for it is to install Obsidian and create a vault, and then you open that in Claude code, and then you paste Carpathy's wiki idea file and tell Claude to build it. And then Claude makes three folders. One is raw for sources, one is wiki for its pages that it creates, and then it creates a claude.md that runs it. And then you put in any source into the raw file and say, ingest this. And then you ask any questions about anything forever. So it takes 5 minutes to set up, and then you've got your own local brain.
Yeah. So this is what they call the augmented mind. Mm. You have a device, but it can store all your information and never forget a single thing, and actually use that as a reservoir to come up with new pieces of information about you. And it only benefits you. It doesn't benefit these larger AIs in the cloud.
You know, it's so interesting that you have this model in your mind of all of these things lasting forever. And, you know, for Alan and I, having been these media pioneers since the early 90s, we have had to completely gut our resources, our media resources, every few years to keep up with the trends in technology. And in technology, things are obsolete in the blink of an eye. Most people who built their careers using CDs can't use CDs anymore. I would say anything that is dependent on your phone, or anything that is dependent on your hard drive, or anything that is dependent on the current way that technology is plugged together, has its own built-in obsolescence. And it's going to be an art form to maintain the backwards compatibility. And so even though we see these artificial beings as immortals of a sort, they're not. They're temporary manifestations of the state of the art of creative thinking. And as long as we keep maintaining them and adding to their capacity, they'll keep describing the world we're in. But the minute that something interrupts that, or something is better and replaces it, they'll go on the dustbin. That's my expectation with any kind of technology.
Yeah, I haven't thrown away my computers yet. I started this in 1982 with, you know, the first IBM PC that I got.
Yeah, but you probably don't have any of those online, right? You don't have them plugged in. They're
not
just sitting there
the
just in case.
One. I sold mine in 1982, you know, to my friend's company. So that's why Al and I, we have a Synology drive because it stores a lot of this information. Like, why do you have a photo album? Are you going to like just toss it in the garbage can? No. I think we're going to store some of our memories that way, but that's just to have that as an archive, you know, that you can call up at will or have your agent call it up and remind you what you forgot.
Yeah, sure. And so we have to teach, like I'm in the process right now of trying to teach our agent to look into a very specific set of archives and understand that is our treasure and that we want to be able to use that to communicate with people. And training the AI to do that is still not just like, here, read this. It's really about going through a few hoops to figure out what does it need to know and how do I need to do it so that it knows it. And that's always the case with technology. Like, there's always a new plateau where you have to copy it forward in order to stay in the game. And it's not automatic. So, it's coming from intention and it's coming from learning about what the new paradigm looks like. And it comes from matching what is required. Your intention leads to your efforts and your efforts manifest in the outcome. So that's, where reality is in that intention and solve your problems through wanting, through your access of desire.
A month from now that there'll be apps, well, as easy as clicking on an app. Right now, you have to use Cloud Code and you have to create these loops that would do what you want to do and automate what you're trying to get it to do. But I would say in a very short period of time that other people want to do similar things, and there will be just clicking on, oh, can you just call up this agent? And you're talking to your AI on your phone, and your phone does all the clicking and going to the website and downloading the agent from GitHub or whatever and executing it, getting it to run.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe it's getting better all the time, and it's different than it used to be. And it's very difficult now to find what was common Google search 2 years ago, right? Because everything's gone to AI search. So you're having more of a conversation, and the way that it's bringing you information is more prose oriented than it is list oriented. I recognize that we are shifting our interface with the cultivation of human knowledge that exists on our internet.
On quantum consciousness, which is, I think, where we're heading all the time, rather than these linear trajectories through it.
That's interesting. Tell me more.
Yeah, no, I think the linear trajectories is traditional media communication now, but I do think that we're going more towards a telepathic network, which means that it's all connected all the time with itself on a global brain scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at a certain point, we probably won't need the technology. I think it'll go to a point where.
Well, why do you think we developed it?
Because it explores the infinity of now in new and exciting ways.
I think it goes quantum because it allows more people to participate simultaneously rather than just
everybody.
One person with their own access.
Many to many, one to many, all of it becomes global. Like a giant fungal network. Only it's our species. And speaking of which, there is a really interesting article that's on a real-life project, Hail Mary.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you saw the movie Hail Mary.
No, I haven't seen it yet. I'd like to.
This is about a hidden fungal network below the Earth that covers 110 quadrillion kilometers. Grasslands, forests, everywhere. It's an extraordinary hidden network.
So this is an expansion of Paul Stamets's,
there's
a 10-mile network in Oregon, right?
Uh-huh.
So yeah,
this is
there's that network. These ancient fungal networks are actually everywhere, and they're quietly supporting much of the life on this planet, that they've been key for a long time. And we're just becoming aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're helping them grow. They're helping them store carbon. They help transfer molecules through the root systems. They apparently do all kinds of fundamental roles in supporting planetary life and the ecosystem. And they have an awareness of the entire network. So the microbial awareness if you will, is of all the species that use them, that work together with them.
I think Terence McKenna talked about that when the mushrooms told him that they had been completely conscious and in touch with all of their own life forms throughout the universe before we were even assembled as a life form. Right? The mycelial intelligence, the hyperlight network of coherent
awareness. I think they're helping us create our own network, the internet as an exonervous system.
Yeah.
But we're connecting it within the context of our species, not as a fungal network. We're a
mutant fungal network.
Well, no, we're another level of complexity, actually, in many respects. Not in all respects. I think the fungals probably connect with more life forms than our species does as a whole.
Yeah.
But our species has a frequency that is very special in universe. And I think part of us is definitely non-local all the time. And part of us is tuning into that. And as we do, we become aware of all these other networks that are simultaneously coexisting with our own. It's quite fascinating. But there's a very interesting article about the global fungal network of arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. Mycorrhizal. They're the ones that end into symbiosis and forming mutually beneficial relationships with about 70% of all land plants. And they have a partnership that works kind of like a natural trade agreement. And maybe we could learn from these guys in terms of creating our trade agreements, you know, on the more complex level, or what we think of as more complex level of human negotiations. The plants produce sugar through the photosynthesis that they do. They provide some of that sugar energy to the fungi. And the fungi takes energy and then helps the plants absorb water and other essential nutrients like phosphorus and nitrogen from the soil.
Hmm.
Symbiotic relationship.
It's a trade, huh? Water for minerals.
Yeah. And then they say that the fungi extend far beyond the plant roots. They act as an extension of the plant's roots. And that this allows the plants to access resources that normally they wouldn't see, that would be out of their reach.
Hmm. I see. Some symbiosis, huh?
Yeah.
This might explain how the roots of some trees can figure out if there's a water line in the ground and will actually start
going towards
their roots gravitating toward the water.
Yeah, the mushrooms
like a pipe,
told them.
A water pipe. And, you know, sometimes it ends up strangling the pipe. But other than that, it seems to have a sixth sense of where the water is. And then generate its roots in that direction before it even gets there. The roots
get
there.
Could it be that the microbial networks help them with the awareness, the situational awareness?
That's what it looks like.
Well, they know which direction the water comes from, I guess.
Yeah, well, they have a lot of sensors that we're discovering. I remember when I was in high school, I was experimenting with plants. How do they know which way to grow up when they're in the ground? You know, you put the seed in, it doesn't matter what angle the seed is. How does it grow up? There's a whole sensor system in there they call geotropism, where it kind of knows which way gravity is. So moisture, I'm sure there are sensors for moisture that run deep, and that maybe those sensors are enhanced by the microbial awareness of moisture, and they pass that information on.
All right, I'll pay you some sugar if you just tell me where the water is.
If you go to a nursery store, you can buy this stuff called Sure Start. And what it is it looks like ashes from your fireplace. It's kind of gray and it's powdery and it's not fertilizer. What it is microbes, these fungi. And you put that at the base of your plant when you plant it. A new plant in the ground from a pot to the ground, you put some of this underneath at the bottom of the hole that you dug, and then it ensures that this plant has the proper microbes and fungus to actually function correctly.
Fantastic! You know? Wow.
Sure Start.
Sure Start. Yes. Well, I think on that note,
it's about time to play our so long music.
Yeah, let me make sure. Oh, I just wanted to mention that SpaceX, they went out into the into the universe last week.
And with their initial public offering for SpaceX.
And as expected, they went up. They're going down. They'll probably go up again soon again. But they're on the ride. But on this part of the journey, they announced the new product that they're putting out. A new demo called Starfall.
Starfall. Keep an eye open for
that. Starfall.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a new type of space capsule, like a flying saucer, that can take something that's been in space for a while. You put it in this little flying saucer, and it gets landed back on Earth. It's a retrieval system.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah. So anything you have up in space can be brought Starfall. Back to the Earth.
I love it.
Starfall. Mm.
You know, Starfall, I think, was also the name of the big party in the movie Brave New World, right? Starfall was a creative experience.
Oh, you have a Starfall party in Brave New World?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So
it's a good
anyway,
name.
That's a good name, and what a good concept. Yeah. So nothing in space goes to waste. We just bring it home safely.
Yeah, bring it home with Starfall.
I love it. That's cool. Thanks.
All right, so we'll see you all next week.
And just be prepared for anything, because who knows what the future holds.
July 4th. I guess we'll be in before that. That's the next big scary date for many people. But I think it's a date of celebration, personally. I'm going to
keep it that way. 250 years in this American experiment.
Yeah, at
least and this hopefully it's just going to keep getting better.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's going to be some incredible fireworks on this 4th of July. That's for sure.
All right. Let's hope there's no clouds.
Yeah.
All right, folks.
All right. Have a great future.
Future's calling me. It sets me free.